sobbing into a pillow while listening to my daughter get plowed one room over, Taylor.
And I am Calix the cuckolding bull back in the room, baby. Jemmy. And this is the Final Girl Files.
Sure is.
Friends, for the first time since this podcast's genesis, we have done two movies in Hot Witch November.
Because we this finally week, did it, guys. We finally did it.
Because this week we watched 1972's Season of the Witch, written and directed by George Romero, and featuring Jan White, Raymond Lane, and Anne Muffley. What a film.
Man.
What a movie.
I had no idea what this was going to be going in.
Yeah, we haven't done a movie that neither of us have seen on this podcast in a hot minute, have we?
Yeah. I don't know what I thought this was going to be, but what it was not that.
It's a lot.
I guess we don't have any memories with this movie because this was the first time that both of us watched it.
Nope, but I just watched it 2 hours ago.
Yeah, my only memory is that I was very baffled by it.
Yes, quick trigger warnings. I got domestic abuse and some, like, allusions towards marital rape, kind of. Also, like, a woman magic spells a guy to have sex with her, which I think is also kind of rape. If you're
uncomfortable
with that. There's
a weird scene involving marijuana, which is like...
Yeah, it's weird.
I don't know how to describe it because it's not non-consensual drugging. They didn't trick her into smoking weed. They did the opposite.
They tricked her into thinking she smoked weed, which is...
When she didn't. I don't know. I feel like it has the potential to upset somebody, but I also don't know how to warn for it, so...
Yeah.
I just described the scene for you. There you go.
There you go.
What does Google have to say about this film?
I really enjoy the Google one for this one
because
the Google summary for this one. A bored housewife's life spins out of control after she dabbles in the occult, which is true. And then the next sentence says, written and directed by George A. Romero.
Wait, hold on. Since when did the summaries have credits in them?
I don't know. Also, this movie has a different title. Hungry Wives is
Oh, it has three titles.
Three? What's the third one?
So, I have backstory for this film.
Oh, please do. I knew you would.
Because this was a strange production history.
Ooh. Gee, I wouldn't have been able to tell.
I'm going to take you back, right? We're going to hop in my time machine, as we often do on this podcast.
Uh-huh.
I need you to get in the passenger seat with me. I'm going to take you on a journey.
Hang on. Let me get the roadmap out of the fucking...
You're unrolling the roadmap?
Yeah. Because your vintage-ass fucking time machine doesn't have a goddamn GPS.
No, I'm sorry. It's too old. It's a vintage car.
Jules Verne-ass.
So, George Romero, right, hot off the success of Night of the Living Dead. Because mm-hmm. Living Dead was 68.
Yes.
And so he was slaying. He was slaying. Everyone loves him. He's doing all kinds of things, all kinds of interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
Inadvertently causes the R rating to be invented.
Because,
fun
hey,
fact.
Everybody, it was the 70s. They were doing fucking whatever in the 70s.
And nowhere is that more apparent than in this film.
They were just doing fucking whatever.
So, right, he writes and he does a few other movies that I haven't seen. But then he makes this movie. Originally, it was filmed under the title Jack's Wife. Don't know why. That's not a good title. I'm going to be honest, George.
No,
I'm gonna
hey,
be
George,
totally
that one's
honest.
Not good.
Not a good one. Like most of George Romero's films, it takes place in Pittsburgh. Because that's where he's from.
It's like Stephen King with Maine.
Literally. People are always talking about Stephen King with Maine. Not enough people are talking about how George Romero's movies are always fucking set in Pittsburgh. He's unable to let Pittsburgh go. So anyway, he makes this movie, Jack's Wife. He's like, oh, slay, fun little, like, weird feminist movie. And this movie's bizarre, right?
Oh, it is. It's insane. Very bizarre.
Is trying to find a distributor for the film. Shock of shocks. No one's interested in it.
Hmm.
Hmm.
I wonder why.
Well, Romero actually said that he thought that nobody wanted it because it was too wordy. Which I guess makes sense.
Now, what does that mean, George?
As weird as it is, like too much talking, too much, you
fair
know.
Fair enough.
Not enough action, too much talking. Which, mm-hmm. like, fair. If I had to critique this movie, it is a little wordy.
We do have to wait a solid hour before we hit anything, like, particularly witchy.
Yeah. So the movie is then acquired by the film producer, the exploitation producer, Jack H. Harris, who, even though he chose to acquire the film and distribute it, he had no idea how to market it. So he released it as Hungry Wives and intentionally marketed it as a softcore porn.
Huh.
God only knows why. 'Cause this movie... is not particularly pornographic.
It does have sex scenes in it, I guess. But
I would say it has sex in it, but not sex scenes. Like, there's, you know, I don't know.
They're not like drawn out or anything.
Yeah, you're like hearing it from anything. Another room, or they're like fading to black. Like, you don't see thrusting on screen.
You don't see thrusting. You see a little bit of a titty at one point, and you do see a guy's ass. So there's that.
But there's not a ton of nudity. Like, as there's no more nudity than in your standard non-pornographic film.
Oh, for sure.
So they didn't recut the movie or anything. Like, this wasn't a Caligula situation where they, like, added in pornographic stuff. They just retitled it, marketed it as a porn, and released it to the public as is.
Man, that would suck. That would
Can
suck.
You imagine?
Going in like, hey, I just want to get my rocks off, man. And you know what? Respect. And then you get this movie.
Like, at the very least, recut it.
For real. Like, add some spice in there, George.
Not that I advocate, you know, messing with the intent of a director in order to market a movie. But also, at least it would make logical sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's no reason to market this movie as pornography. The tagline for this film, the Hungry Wives version, is caviar in the kitchen, nothing in the bedroom, hungry wives with an appetite for diversion. Not a mention of witches.
That's nothing.
I just...
Hey, Jack? That's nothing.
It's nothing.
It's fucking less than nothing.
Imagine you're like, I'm going to go see some MILF porn.
Yeah. And like, again, respect.
We all love MILFs.
We do. And then they're like, actually have this really wordy movie about witches.
So yeah, basically the original film negative and Romero's original cut of the film are both lost. Oh. What we have now is like an edit from like 2005.
Oh man.
Yeah. That sucks. Like, we'll never see it as it was originally intended. All we will ever really get to see is this version that Anchor Bay released in 2005, which is about as close as we're ever going to get, which sucks. But I mean, I can't imagine what else could have been cut that would have made it make more sense. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
I doubt there was a scene that was left on the cutting room floor that you would watch and be like,
ah, I get it now.
Oh man, this is a weird movie.
Which is why I think we need to rely on the sort of beat by beat explanation of the plot, because otherwise, like, how the fuck else do you talk about this
scene? Yeah, we're gonna get so lost in the weeds.
Yeah.
So the film begins with some, like the thing that the opening scene of this movie made me think of. Have you ever seen the movie Blood on Satan's Claw?
It's been on my list like forever, but I haven't.
It's giving Blood on Satan's Claw. Like, it's giving Wicker Man.
It is,
it's
very
giving Blood on Satan's Claw.
It is giving
that,
Wicker,
like,
Man.
Weird 70s like shaky POV shots.
Mm-hmm. With like weird imagery.
Yeah. It's a dream sequence.
Yeah. I figured out pretty quick that it's a dream sequence. I was watching and I was like, ah.
Yeah, our main character, Joan, has a lot of very weird dream sequences throughout the film.
Yes.
This is one of them. She's like running through the woods.
Not even running. She's like walking through the woods after her husband. Right?
Her husband, who looks like Edward Woodward, speaking of The Wicker Man.
Does. Oh, he looks my
like
God.
He, but not Edward Woodward in The Wicker Man. He looks like beefed up Edward Woodward from A Christmas Carol.
He does. Oh, fuck. I don't like that. Hey, I don't like that, Taylor.
Well, sorry.
You're not, but it's okay.
I'm not. But yeah, she has this weird ass dream. She, shock of shocks, lives in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
Housewife. She and her husband Jack have a daughter named Nikki, who's a college student.
Nikki, who looks like every 70s teenage girl in a movie ever.
Yeah, what you're picturing right now, that's what Nikki looks like. She's like the hot one out of her group of friends, which I think is funny. Like, her friends are always talking about how she's like the young hot one, which rules. Yeah. She's got a bunch of insane friends.
She does.
Well, okay, so there's the one who has the weed problem that we discuss later.
Yes.
And then there's the one friend with the gray hair who keeps like popping up.
With like
thick ass eyebrows and the gray hair. And she's like kind of a cunt, but like kind of in a fun way.
Yeah.
Like she's kind of giving B. Arthur.
Yes.
I like her.
Oh my God.
So her relationship is, I mean, how would you describe Joan and Jack's marriage?
Heterosexual.
Well, yes, but I mean, derogatory or...
Oh, derogatory, 100%. 100%. No, this ain't the Warrens, friends.
No, things are not good in this house.
Yeah, no, they just don't. They're very much like the stereotypical... Oh man, my ball and chain wife and my dumb husband kind of thing.
Yeah, he does not like her. And no. Honestly, she does not really like him either.
Yeah, no, they do not like each other.
But also, like, she seems fairly justified in not liking him.
Yeah, he's an asshole. Like, he's just an asshole. Like, that's... I forgot.
She's also constantly having nightmares, like we said, but they're all like about how she feels like he's like a domineering force in her life.
Yeah, there's a good old nightmare where he walks her like a dog to a kennel.
I do honestly love that scene.
It's good.
It's really good. I love the, like, she's in the car, right? And then it cuts away from her back to the husband. And then when it cuts back to her, she's got a dog collar on. And you just see his hand enter the shot. And he clips the collar. And then he just walks her around like a dog. It's a really good visual metaphor.
It is. I was expecting it to turn horny. But maybe that's just me.
Despite the marketing, this was not that kind of a film.
No.
She also is seeing like a...
Oh, like the most 70s psychiatrist you've ever seen.
She's like sitting in like across from him in like a desk chair.
In like the tiniest little office. They are like feet away from each other, which is insane.
Like not even a couch?
No, just a fucking office chair for this woman to sit in while he psychoanalyzes her.
It's like she's receiving a cancer diagnosis.
It is. It like took me a minute to figure out, like, oh, wait a minute. He's like a doctor and he's doing therapy on her. Very, very like... Very, like, almost psychosexual, like, dream. Is that the one where, the dreams are really important and everything?
Well, yeah, because, like, she's like, yeah, I've been having these really weird dreams. And he's, like, he straight up tells her, like, well, you're not going to know what your fucking dreams mean.
Or whatever he says to her. Where he's like, the truth that we tell ourselves or something like that.
Yeah, he's like, your dreams always mean something. But also, the person who's dreaming is not going to be able to figure out what their dreams mean. Which is some bullshit.
Which is insane. Which is genuinely insane.
I feel like at every turn, this psychotherapist is just a manifestation of, like, the patriarchy over her.
Absolutely.
Because it's like she's seeing him to try to learn some things about herself, and all he's doing is being like, no, you just need to, like, shut up and stop thinking about it and let other people do work for you.
A woman will never understand her own mind. Come now, dear.
Yeah, it's very Well, they do make several explicit references to Rosemary's Baby, actually.
They do. Very explicit.
Yeah.
In fact.
Yeah. Well, because during the scene where Joan is hanging out with her friends, Cunty B. Arthur, Shirley, who is, like, a little older. She's got that, like, 60s beehive hair. Yeah, it's like Joan is hanging out with Cunty B. Arthur and Shirley the Square.
Yes.
And all the ladies in town, all the housewives are gossiping about this new woman who just moved to town named Marion. And they're all like, oh, like, she brags about it. She's a witch and she does tarot readings and stuff. And isn't that crazy? And Joan decides, like, she basically turns to Shirley and is like, we should go get a tarot reading from this lady and see what's up.
She's just like me for real, honestly.
I love a tarot reading.
I do too.
And like, I thought Marion was like the coolest character in this film.
Marion, dark-haired witch in purple, Agatha Harkness variant, thank you so much. Anyway.
Real. So real. Oh my god,
yeah. No,
yeah.
She was incredibly cool.
I want to be Marion when I grow up.
Oh, God, I do too.
To be the new single woman in town who is like a witch who does tarot readings, you know?
Truly. That was my calling, and it's just not a position you can really fill anymore, which kind of sucks.
I do think another funny thing about this movie is like how there's like no secrecy with the witches. It's not like a thing that anyone tries to keep hidden. Marion's like they meet her and she's doing the tarot reading and she's like, yeah, there's like a group of us. We like meet up. We like do spells.
Yeah.
It's cool. It's chill. My dad and my mom were witches. It's pretty slay.
Equal opportunity gender for witches, by the way. Very nice. Love that.
Oh yeah. She mentions her father was a witch, which is cool. I like that. And then like, not to spoil, but like at the end of the movie, when we see like an actual witch coven meeting, like there's men and women in there.
You love to see it. You love an inclusive coven.
We do love an inclusive coven. Yeah, so like this whole experience, the tarot reading, the like cavalier way that she makes reference to this witch's coven, like really like gets Joan kind of like, this is interesting. I might want to try this. And then Joan and Shirley go back to Joan's house, which at that point in my notes I wrote, I think these two are kind of...
Yeah.
These two are a little...
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah. They are a little... There's tension. There's tension there.
I do believe this to be a good for her film, but I do think, like, a better for her film would be, like, these two becoming witches together.
I agree.
But, yeah, they go back to Joan's house, and they meet Greg. Greg with... Greg with two G's, according to the credits, which is funny.
According to the captions as well. By the way, friends, this film is available to stream on your favorite streaming service and mine, Tubi.
Ah, yes, Tubi. It is under the it is under the title Hungry Wives on Tubi, though.
No, it's under Season of the... Well, yeah, actually it is, but the poster says Season of the Witch, so who knows?
Yeah, but then when the title pops up at the beginning of the movie, it's Hungry Wives.
Yeah, it's very strange. People are very strange these days.
People are very strange these days. But yeah, they meet Gregaga, who is, I don't know, he's not a professor.
He's like a TA, right?
Yeah, he's like a TA at her daughter's university. And he's also sleeping with Nikki.
But like casually, they do make it like a point to say it's like a casual thing.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we're not dating. We're just boning down on the reg.
Good for them.
For some reason, Shirley just stays and hangs out, which is hilarious to me.
Yeah. Like, okay, girl. Like,
people were built different in the 70s, I guess.
They really were.
But yeah, the four of them are like drinking and talking, and Greg is like hitting on Joan, and she's like... kind of rebuffing him
because it's her daughter's
friend because she's normal, at least for now.
Yeah, because at this point in the story she's normal.
Then Greg does something that I don't think anyone has ever done.
Yeah, literally never. No one has ever done this weird
no
shit.
One has ever done this. And like, I feel like George Romero, I mean, I've seen interviews of him, right? He strikes me as the kind of guy who smokes weed.
Oh yeah. See, the thing about Greg, but, right?
But, like, the writing of this movie is giving Beyond the Valley of the Dolls with regards to its attitudes on marijuana.
Yeah, the thing with this movie, right, is that, the thing with Greg, specifically, sorry. The thing with Greg, he strikes me as the kind of guy that would be, like, really obnoxious about being an atheist.
Oh my god, he's so Reddit atheist.
He's so Reddit atheist. Like, that's the vibe I get from this man.
Yeah, Greg loves H.P. Lovecraft.
But yeah, he does this thing where he, like, God, what is it? He, like, wants to prove the power of suggestion, because they're talking about, like, magic and voodoo, because I just got back from this fucking tarot reading. And, of course, they bring out and voodoo. And Nikki's
like, Mom, stop talking about spells. It's really funny. She's like, she treats it like Mom is on one of her embarrassing tangents again. She's like, Mom, stop talking about witchcraft.
But, oh, he, like, takes a joint,
and what does he do? But doesn't put any weed in it. It's just the paper. It's just the paper.
And so he rolls it up. He says he's, like, gonna prove to, like, this is the Reddit atheist in him. He's gonna prove to fucking, Joan and Nikki that, like, the power of suggestion can do weird things. Or can, like, you know, influence a person's mind to where they believe these things. You know, essentially he says, like, magic is like somebody putting, like, planting an idea in your brain and your brain just does the rest.
Yeah.
So he, does he, like, he gets her
to tell Shirley that he's giving her weed.
Yeah.
And she starts acting high. And, like, then he starts, like, weirdly, like, bullying her.
Yeah.
I don't know what he was doing. I don't know what he was trying to even prove, because nothing that he did proved what he was attempting to prove.
I mean, at some point, it just becomes a weird power trip for him.
Yeah, he just kind of likes needling this woman. And, Shirley starts talking about how she's terrified of aging, and she feels like she, you know, is getting older every day, and that she hasn't done enough living. You know, she says, I feel like I'm not finished yet, you know. Mm-hmm. Which is a theme that this movie, like, repeatedly comes back to over and over again, is this idea of, like, living a whole life without experiencing everything that life has to offer.
Yeah.
Which is very existentially upsetting.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I do also have this fear, George Romero.
Don't we all? Don't we all? Especially in this day and age.
Yeah. There's a lot of clocks, like ominous shots of clocks. Mm-hmm. Joan has a dream. I forget if it's before this or, like, I think it's before this, where she has a dream where she sees a version of herself in the mirror who's, like, gray-haired and wrinkled.
Yes. And she's, like, being led through the house on, like, a, almost like a real estate agent tour, right? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. She's, like, being introduced to her own life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the dream sequences, I think, are some of the best parts of this movie, because when it really leans into being surreal, I really, really dig it. Mm-hmm. I think where this movie kind of falls apart for me is the like, George Romero himself said the really wordy stuff. Really,
yeah.
I get bored. But then they start doing weird shit again, and I'm like, yeah, show me more of that. Exactly. I want to see more of that. But yeah, then Shirley gets freaked out and, like, leaves. And Joan tells Gregaga off.
No, she doesn't leave. She has Joan take her home.
Yes, Joan drives her home. Because then when Joan comes back,
fucking Gregaga is back again.
Gregaga returns. And Greg and Nikki are boning down. They're getting freaky.
Literally while her mother is in the other room, which is crazy behavior.
To be fair, they probably assumed she'd be gone for longer.
That's true.
But also, like, I don't know, throw a record on or something. It's the 70s.
Make an effort.
Just, like, be a little quiet. Like, you still live in the house with your mother. I don't know.
I couldn't.
And so, like, trying to describe what happens here is hard, because basically she hears them boning
and going to Pound Town.
I guess gets, like, really horny about it and, like, goes to her bedroom and starts crying and, like, palming herself through her skirt.
Yeah,
she's, like, about to start jerking it.
jerked
until it. Nikki walks in on her. And she's like, hey, mom, what the fuck? And she gets pissed off, rightfully so.
Isn't she literally, like, real nice, mom?
Yeah, no, she, because she doesn't get, like, shouting angry. She's just like, yeah, she says, like, oh, yeah, nice, mom. And then she just leaves.
Really good.
Yeah. I don't blame her.
I don't either.
I would also be upset by this.
I'd be even more, I'd be more upset. I'd be screaming angry. Never mind, just, like, real nice, mom.
Yeah. So Nikki leaves. And they're kind of concerned about this, okay. But also they get over it very quickly.
Literally, like, okay, the 70s were just such a different fucking time, right? Because, like,
no one gave a fuck.
I wrote in my notes, I was like, oh, a pretty blonde white teenage girl going missing from suburbia would be national fucking news.
Literally.
In 2023.
In 2023, this would literally be, like, every true crime fucking podcast would be, like, what happened to Nikki Mitchell? Like,
shut
fucking
the fuck up, because I literally wrote all the true crime girlies would be all over it.
Yeah, because they would.
They would. TikTok would be insane about this.
But, like, in the 70s, like, you have one conversation with the cops, and then they're like, she's probably with a relative. And then she is not mentioned again for the entire rest of the film. She's just gone.
Hope she comes home at some point. Shrugs.
I mean, I guess I kind of hope she doesn't come home, because God, what awaits her when she does?
I mean, she does come home eventually. I think at some point they're like, oh yeah, she's coming home. And then they just never show it because it doesn't matter.
I missed that. I completely missed that. Was it like a throwaway line?
I guess. I just saw it in the Wikipedia thing.
Yeah, because if that happened, I completely missed it, which is somehow even funnier. So then they briefly get upset about it, but then Jack is like, whatever, and he goes on another fucking business trip.
God.
And then the greatest scene in the film.
Yes.
Joan goes to the store.
God.
They said, we paid the full amount for use of the song Season of the Witch, and we will use the entire song.
You are going to hear the entire goddamn thing. And I said, thank you, George.
Thank you, George.
I do love that song. Thank you.
3 whole minutes of her walking around this, like, witch store.
Oh,
it's really good.
Oh, to be.
God, I wish I was a housewife in the 70s fucking walking
around. It's not even
around,
like, a witch store. It's like an antique store, and she just picks out, like, witchy things, and the guy at the cashier is like, oh, wow.
I loved that cashier guy. He's like, what are you, a witch? And she's like, yes. And he's like, oh, I was joking.
King stays in his lane. Good for him.
If I was that cashier, I would never be able to stop thinking about her.
Truly.
She would be living in, like, rent-free in my mind for the rest of my life. And with her newfound accoutrement, her witchcraft items, she, I mean, have y'all seen The Love Witch? She does that.
She does that. She does a love witch.
She does a love witch, but specifically for her daughter's, like,
her daughter's
hookup.
Like, yeah.
Not boyfriend, like the guy her daughter was hooking up with. I mean, does he know that she overheard the two of them fucking?
I feel like he wouldn't care if he did.
That's true. He doesn't seem the kind of guy who would care. Honestly, he'd probably think it was hot.
Yeah, he's a weird one, Gregaga.
Gregaga, strange guy. I love his outfits.
He does have some good little outfits.
If you guys have ever seen the Hanna-Barbera Josie and the Pussycats cartoon, he's dressed like their manager.
I was really obsessed with his, like, corduroy turtleneck. God, the 70s were just such an era for fashion.
This
I don't
movie
know if
has
it's good or bad,
fits.
But boy.
So yeah, she basically does a spell, and then she and Greg fuck.
They fuck.
They fuck. And then she starts, her nightmares go from, like, I'm really trapped and alone in my life, to I'm being murdered by a man in a mask.
Yeah, and that's not good. That's not what you want.
Yeah, it's not good. I hated that mask.
It's a weird one.
It was really bad to look at.
It's It's like kind of like a devil face.
But it was like gray.
Yeah.
And oh, so weird.
Not good. Hey guys. Not a good one.
Yeah, apparently the like wanting to make it more pornographic was even a thing during the filming process because the distributor wanted Romero to reshoot the sex scenes. There's two of them between Joan and Greg. There's the one right after she does the love spell and then the one where she's like, I don't think we should fuck anymore.
Yeah, and then they fuck.
And then they fuck. And yeah, apparently our friend Jack Harris wanted Romero to reshoot them to be sexier and have more nudity. And Romero was like, no. I will not do that.
I will not compromise my integrity. And you know what? Good for him.
Yeah, honestly, I'm like, the thing is, I do feel like that was the correct choice because I feel like any objectification of Joan on the part of the filmmakers would cheapen the message of the film.
Yeah, it would for sure.
Because, like, you know, not to say, and this isn't to imply that if you're fucking... you're not like a whole person. Whole. But
we're
also,
we're two asexual women, so.
It's true. And as an asexual, I do believe that if you are horny, you do not deserve rights.
Exactly. And listen, if you want to hear all about that, you should listen to our Escape from Tomorrow episode.
Precisely.
Where we make it very clear, horny people do not have rights.
No, they are not protected under the Constitution. If you are horny, I will find you, etc., etc. But like, on a real one.
Yes.
I do feel like there is this kind of movie that exists, especially in like the 70s, that is like trying to be feminist. And this is like a type of movie that's like trying to be feminist, but is very weird and male gazy about its female lead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it does kind of, because like at the end of the day, a movie is a thing that someone made decisions to do. Like, Joan is not an independent actor. She is a character written by a man and in a movie directed by that man.
Yes.
So, like, anything she does is not her. I know that I'm going into very specific terms, but I feel like this is an aspect of film theory that's kind of lost in a lot of discussions of film.
You can just say it. It's a thing that's across all media. It's just a lack of understanding that, hey, sometimes characters are not people.
Yeah, and like the thing is, like, she is Slay and she is a girl boss, but also, like, I don't know. I think the choice to keep the sex those two guys are having relatively off screen. You know, obviously there's like post-sex pillow talk type stuff, but yes. And there's some moaning and, you know, like fade to black type things. But like overall, it's pretty off camera.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really get to see a lot. And I think that affords her a level of control over her sexuality. Like Joan's sexuality is not for the audience's consumption. It's for her.
Yeah.
She's fucking Greg because she wants to get plowed by a younger man. And God, I get it. She's so real for that.
Yep. She's so real. She's so fucking real for that. Good for her.
She is so real for that. But yeah, they fuck one more time and she's like, I don't think we should do this anymore. And he's like, all right, peace out.
Bye, lady.
Yeah. I do like that he wasn't weird about it.
Yeah.
Like, it could have been a conflict in the movie, and then it wasn't.
It's established that he's just, like, a guy who has casual sex with people.
Yeah. Fuck this girl in one of my classes, fuck her mom. It's all chill.
What a king.
Yeah, so she keeps having these weird nightmares with the masked intruder. And then, let's have a discussion.
All right.
About the ending of the film.
I'd love to have a discussion with you, Taylor.
Because on paper, right, what happens is Jack comes home early from the trip. Joan has another nightmare about the masked intruder. She shoots and kills her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And then is inducted into the coven.
Yes.
So, do you think she did it on purpose? Did she plan this? Or was it just... she was paranoid because of the dreams and accidentally shot him. self-defense.
Here's my thought. The ending places a lot of emphasis, thank you, there's the word, on her being referred to as the title says, Jack's wife. And that is sort of like a thematic element, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if his death was accidental, that loses a little bit of its sting, you know?
Interesting.
I don't think it was accidental.
Now, I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Go for it.
Why not kill him with witchcraft?
Wouldn't you want to shoot that fucker?
Yeah, no, you've convinced me. That's
Wouldn't
true.
Wouldn't you want to just have a gun in your hands for that? Come on now.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's
Wouldn't you want to shoot the bastard?
Because, like, I don't know, I was fascinated by the way that Jan White played that scene.
Mm, it is ambiguous. Let me get that out of the way. It is ambiguous. I'm not saying that my interpretation is the only one. I think that it is a facet of media that it is in fact open to interpretation, but you know.
Yeah, and I think also there's something to be said about the way that the cops talk about it.
Yes.
Because they're immediately like, well, we all know that she's not going to get convicted for it. Like, whether it was an accident or not, she's going to, you know, get off.
And good for her.
That's interesting to me because that implies, and I wasn't alive in the 70s. I don't know if you can tell that from the way I speak. I'm a youthful spring chicken.
Yeah.
And
I'm always thinking this about you, Taylor.
Many people are saying this.
Many such cases.
Yeah. But I wasn't alive in the 70s. I don't know what the social attitudes were. But the vibe I get is that because women were assumed, especially back then, to be by default sort of like, you know, she's the wholesome upper class white housewife with the mm-hmm. perfect house and the perfect life and mm-hmm. the, you know, whatever. Like, of course, no one would ever, like, no jury would ever assume that she would want to kill her husband.
Exactly.
And I think that if she did it, which I think I was playing devil's advocate, but I do think she did. If we're going with that interpretation, I think that that was in the forefront of her mind.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
She knew that because of her position in the world, where she stood as this sort of wealthy white suburban woman, that she would be able to get away with murder.
Yep.
That the presumption would be, well, she has no reason to kill him. Because exactly. No one ever thinks of the horrors that fucking women go through at the hands of their husbands.
Exactly. And we bring that full circle thematically. There we go.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Good job,
also,
George.
Also, God, I love the witch coven.
God, I wish that were me.
It's so fun. I just feel like they have so much fun.
They have fun together. God, I wish I was there.
I wish, God, yeah. Hey, listeners. Anyone out there want to start a coven?
I mean, you know I'm on board.
Yeah. So me and Jemmy will be the leaders, obviously. Yes, we obviously. Know this. Yeah. We will be your, like, your benevolent leaders.
Mostly benevolent.
I would be a great cult leader.
You know who would be a great cult leader? My brother Jace.
I agree with that, if only because he has a voice that has gravitas to it.
He does.
He has said some of the silliest sentences that I have ever heard another human being say in my life, but he has the kind of voice that lends an air of gravitas to everything
he does. Says. He has, I think he has the charisma.
Maybe he can be the front-facing man of the operation and you and me could pull the strings.
Exactly, because we are an inclusive coven.
We are a gender-neutral coven.
All genders are welcome here.
Yeah, anybody is invited. We respect all identities here, And we would love to have
TERFs can go to hell.
Yeah, if you're a TERF, stay the fuck away. Get out. This is a TERF exclusive cult. We don't want you. You know how TERFs are obsessed with being like, we're the daughters of the witches you couldn't burn? I think it would be Slay to just take that from them.
I think it's especially funny because it's like, you know, they're talking about Salem and no one was burned in Salem.
No one was burned in Salem.
They were all hung.
I feel like that one clip from RuPaul's Drag Race. Nobody died at Stonewall.
Nobody burned in Salem. They all got hanged. Except for Giles Corey.
Yeah, he got fucking crushed.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you do get convicted of a crime in our cult, we will crush you to death Giles Corey style.
We will.
That is mandatory. Mm-hmm. So before you join, just keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think we could really get this going.
We could. We absolutely could.
Anyone who wants to be a part of this cult, like, hit us up. Like, literally, I feel like it was only a matter of time before we did this.
In the comments of the episode, coven, cult, whatever you want. Like, you know, we'll
hit us up, shoot us an email, comment on our Instagram posts, like,
feed the algorithm.
feed the algorithm. What if when we eventually make a Patreon, the Patreon can be the cult?
I like that.
I like that too. We got to model our meetings after the meeting from this movie, because again, they seemed like they were having an awesome time. Oh,
so like deliciously campy. I love it. God yeah, bless the 70s.
I also think it should be mandatory that we need to all dress like it's the 70s.
Oh yeah, obviously. I mean, the 70s are making a comeback, so.
Oh, we didn't do our thing that we do with the 70s movies, where we talk about our favorite and least favorite outfits.
Oh God, yes. Okay.
Whenever, if this is your first time listening, whenever we cover a film from the 70s, we always talk about the fits.
Because 70s fashion is on another level.
They were doing other things. Things that the mortal mind couldn't even contemplate. The kinds of fashion you could only create being on insane amounts of coke.
Exactly. And God, it's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My favorite. I have two favorites. I do love my man Gregaga's corduroy turtleneck. I think that's a fucking look.
It is a good look.
With the little blazer. I think that's a good look. Maybe that's just the butch lesbian in me. And I also, I like Joan's little orange number that she wears when she like does witchcraft for the first time.
Ooh, yeah.
She also has like a red outfit that I enjoyed when she was talking to the police.
Yeah, that was a cute fit too.
I love her red.
The rain slickers on the Criterion Collection poster, yes. Like that's iconic.
Mm-hmm.
If you know anything about this movie, but you haven't seen it, you've probably seen the Criterion Collection cover. And so you know the slicker, the yellow yes. rain slicker.
Shockingly enough, I cannot think of an outfit that I really disliked. It wasn't anything like egregiously terrible.
I didn't like the outfit that she wore when she was listening to her daughter fuck Nasty.
Oh, I see. I didn't like that weird
checkered tweed skirt.
Oh, yeah.
Bad. I didn't love it.
No, that's not. No. That's
you ever
nothing.
Look at an outfit in an old movie and you're like, oh, that looks really scratchy.
Yeah. Because, you know, they actually made clothes out of, like, quality materials back then.
Yeah, that skirt looked scratchy as fuck. And the pantyhose, oh my God.
God.
I did love the second time that she was in the psychiatrist's office. She had this blue scarf that she was wearing as a headband.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love a scarf as, like, a hair accessory.
Me too. I thought that was my favorite, like, look in the film.
I love,
that
like,
scarf
a...
scarf as the headband. So cute.
I love a scarf as, like, tying a ponytail back. I love that.
Yes, I love that too. I thought she looked 10 times better when her hair was down.
I agree. 100%. When
the hair up, that actress who played her, beautiful woman. Maybe don't wear your hair up.
Grade A MILF. Just keep your hair down, girl.
Just keep that. When her hair was down, stunning, beautiful, 10 out of 10, no notes. When the hair was up, I don't know. There was something up with it.
Listen, some of us just aren't built to have our hair up, and that's okay.
And that's okay. That's Slay, that's valid. But her hair was up for like about 70% of the film.
Yeah.
But when her hair was down, I was like, Queen Slay.
Pull it down, girl.
That's the film.
That is the film.
It's a short film.
It is short. It's, what, like an hour and 20 minutes?
Yep.
God, we love when a film embraces brevity.
Brevity is the soul of wit.
It is.
And can you imagine this movie, but with two really long softcore sex scenes in it?
God.
It would have been abhorrent. Thank you, George Romero, for holding your ground.
Yeah, thank you for making this movie not appalling.
I wouldn't have been able to handle it. I love a horny movie. It would have felt out of place here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This isn't like... See, the thing is, horny movie should usually be like a pervert movie on this podcast. This isn't really a pervert movie.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, that I think brings up a very salient point, which is there's a difference between a movie where there's fucking and a pervert movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Because sex is had in this movie. Joan is canonically a horny woman. Love it for her.
Yeah.
But also, it's not a pervert film.
No, a pervert movie has a certain je ne sais quoi, as you will.
It's got a level of sleaziness.
Yeah.
Nastiness.
Yeah, and this is just not present here.
And as much as the producer wanted it to be sleazy, this is just not a sleazy film.
It's not. It's really not.
Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, very sleazy
film. Now there's a sleazy film.
This movie? Not so much. Also, I don't know if this was a horror movie.
Hey,
I'm gonna be honest.
Hey, Taylor, I don't think it was.
I don't think it was. I was told, I have always been told that this is like George Romero's like underground horror classic. Like the George Romero horror film that you've never seen. That is how everybody talks about this movie. There, nothing horror related happened in it.
Nope. Hey guys, this isn't a horror. It's a good movie. It's a good film.
This is a good movie. It's not a horror film.
Nope, not a horror flick. Sorry to say. We've bamboozled you, but we've been bamboozled. So
That's the problem with doing movies that neither of us have ever seen, is that sometimes this happens.
Sometimes you accidentally don't do a horror movie on your horror podcast.
Is this the first time that that's happened to us? Because usually we've done things that teeter on the border, but one of us always knows that we're teetering. I think this is the first movie where we've both been taken off guard by the fact that this is just not a horror film.
Listen, we did Van Helsing, we did Werewolf by Night, we did...
I'm going to push back. Werewolf by Night is a horror movie.
Okay. I'm not going to argue with you.
I'm gonna push back. Van Helsing is very firmly an action movie with Dracula. But Werewolf by Night, I think, is a horror film.
Okay.
Marvel fans, come at me.
Okay, did we have this conversation, or did I have a conversation with somebody else where you said Werewolf by Night is about as much a horror movie as Van Helsing is? I think we had this conversation. I'm going back in our Discord right now, because I think you said this to me.
Maybe, but you know what? Times change.
Hold on, listeners. I'm pulling up the fucking receipts.
Oh, no. I'm going to have my own text read back to me.
Hang on. You can cut this out if I don't find it. we mentioned Van Helsing a lot in our Discord conversations. There's 140 results on Van Helsing.
There will be more.
And there will be more. I swear we had this conversation.
Maybe we had it in the Earth realm.
Hold on.
Maybe we had it on our Werewolf by Night episode.
No, we had this in text. I remember reading this from you. Fuck. Hold on.
Maybe it was one of your other hoes.
Maybe it was one of my other hoes who I'm talking about.
Maybe it was one of your other hoes.
Who else am I talking about Van Helsing and Werewolf by Night with?
One of your other hoes, obviously.
Wasn't in Kairos. Okay, maybe I'm lying, listeners.
Maybe you had a dream.
Maybe I did have a dream. I swear you said this to me, because I came to you.
Are you sure that I didn't say this to you on the material plane?
I may have said
it with my mouth. This feels like the kind of stupid shit I would say with my mouth without thinking.
You know what? It might have been. It might have actually been while we were watching Werewolf by Night.
Anyway,
hey guys, how do you feel about a second tangent about Werewolf by Night?
Oh, Jemmy, if they weren't down for tangents about Werewolf by Night, they wouldn't be listening to this fucking podcast.
This and the fucking Webkinz Wolf conversation. It's a lot on my spirit. Anyway, you did say this to me, and okay. I'm going to hold you
I love that you went from skeptical about this to convinced that I did say this to you and that you, I'm wrong.
I'm holding you accountable.
Guys, I'm listening and learning.
Sit your white ass down.
I didn't watch Werewolf by Night. I sat my white ass down and I listened.
Okay.
We've lost the plot.
Can you please put us out of our misery and do Live, Laugh, Letterboxd?
Yes, I can. I can. I don't even know what we were talking about, but it's over now.
Put this bit out of its misery, please.
But I did sit my white ass down and I listened, just like you're about to sit your white ass down and listen to these Letterboxd reviews that I found. It's a really good segue. you liked that one, huh?
Sorry.
It was a good one?
Yeah.
Okay.
It almost makes me forgive you for saying that Werewolf by Night is only as much a horror movie as Van Helsing.
Saying this.
Okay, that's it. We're done. Give me the Letterboxd reviews.
I think this might have been a dream you had.
I don't think somebody said this to me. Somebody fucking said this to me. Somebody's gonna be held accountable for it.
Too much. Anyway, I do a segment on this podcast called Live, Laugh, Letterboxd, where I laugh my ass off while trying to get through my intro, and I read funny Letterboxd reviews. This first one is from Dom, who says, "Turns out there's another film called Season of the Witch. I went in expecting a Nicolas Cage sword and sorcery epic, and instead I got a man having sex in a bucket hat. 3 stars. We don't talk enough about how Gregaga fucked in a bucket hat.
Don't you hate when that happens, Taylor?
That's happened to me so much. The bucket hat stays on during sex.
I don't like that.
Ask anyone. Sam says, love when movies include the entirety of a song in them because it's like, damn, that must have cost a lot of money for you guys.
And you know what? Yeah.
Yeah. Maymay says, I wish me and my friends got excited over anything as much as the people in this movie get excited about Mad Libs.
So true. Okay.
We didn't talk about the Mad Libs.
Hey, were they playing Mad Libs at parties in the 70s?
Okay, here's the thing, right? I don't know the history of Mad Libs. But
I don't either.
I feel like Mad Libs might have been new.
Oh, it might have been. That's right? True. Yeah.
Like, maybe, like, they had just dropped Mad Libs.
Huh.
And this was, like, the hot new thing.
Yeah.
This was true. Hey, God. Listeners who were adults in the 70s, I'm sure you're out there, because what else would you be doing?
besides listening to this podcast.
I hope you're enjoying your stay at the nursing home.
Oh, my God.
Were you playing Mad Libs at parties? I will say, though, I kept thinking about the fact that the women in this movie, all like the housewives in this movie, would have been the same age as my grandmother was in 1972. Because my grandma was middle-aged with teenage daughters in the early 70s.
Mad Libs, Google says, was invented in 1953.
Oh, so Mad Libs wasn't even new.
It wasn't even new. It'd been around for 20 years. No name was chosen until 5 years later in 58, but it was around.
Okay. So then that's not even... The people in this movie are just on coke.
That's nothing.
This person has an unpronounceable name, and I'm not saying that to insult people with names from other countries. It's literally just a key smash.
Good for them.
S-Z-X-K-N-Q. Like, it's just random letters. But they wrote it, like an actually thought-provoking review, but the first line made me giggle. They said, all these white people, the season of the witch must be salt.
Shut up.
And I thought that was very good.
That's really good.
Emma simply says, this is why I don't date younger men anymore.
It's a good reason.
Adam
they
says,
might be Greg. They might fuck you in a bucket hat.
Honestly, like if I had a sexual experience with Gregaga, that would be enough to make me realize I was a lesbian sooner than I did.
Yeah. That's your problem.
I can't imagine he's good at sex.
Oh, God, no. He's a ray atheist, Taylor.
Yeah. Adam says, girls just want to have fun. 3 stars.
So true.
Liz says, would become a witch in an instant if all gods and goddesses took the form of adorable cats that sneak into your house.
I loved that cat.
That was a
really good cat.
That was a good kitty. And finally, Cinema Void says, ladies, is it girl boss to fuck your daughter's boyfriend and dabble in the black arts just to escape suburban ennui? It is.
Yes.
This is a good for her film, and I will go down with that opinion. Fuck the haters. I don't know if there are haters, but if there are, fuck you.
I forgive her.
I literally forgive her, and so should you.
We all should.
She did literally nothing wrong. I support her right to do that. What's your star rating for this film?
You know what? Solid 3.5. Not my usual cup of tea, but a well-made film, and I enjoyed it.
I'm going to say 4 because sexy 70s vibes.
Yeah.
Make that a movie sense. More for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it does get a little over-explainy at times.
Hey, Romero himself admitted it, so, you know.
George, I'm looking up at the heavens. I hope you can hear me up there. You made a solid flick, my guy.
Thanks, man. We appreciate it.
Thanks, man. You're a real one.
You're a real one.
I hope he's still wearing his thick ass glasses in heaven.
You know he is.
Just for the vibes. Oh, we're doing Sinister next week, aren't we?
Yes. Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
Movie I've never seen.
I'm really sorry that I'm making you do this. But we are watching Scott Derrickson's Sinister next week. Sorry, guys.
Hey.
And hey, if you're wondering why we're watching Sinister for Christmas, tune in next time and you'll find out.
You'll find out. There's a story.
There is a story.
Huh.
And until then, you can follow us at FGF Pod on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. And if you enjoyed listening to me try to pull receipts on Taylor, you can give us 5 stars at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, do whatever it is you need to do on your podcast platform or choice. Let us know that you enjoyed what we did here today. We will see you next time for Sinister. Bye, guys. Sorry about that.
Bye.